Coming to you from Studio Ice Nine in Earth's capital, San Diego, California, USA. It's the Beatdown Show.
If you don't think it's mess, you got the wrong damn address.
Here is your indomitable host, C. Colton.
Hibernation is a covert preparation for a more overt action. The immortal words of 20th century American novelist Ralph Ellison. What it do, my nephews? What's happening, kinfolk? How are you? We are here. We are ready to go. We are back from a long slumber. Not that long. A few months. But we are back with another episode. Episode 4 of the Almighty Beatdown Show.
That's marvelous.
It most certainly is. And great to be back over at Studio Ice Nine. We're making it happen here. I am your host, C. Colton, a.k.a. C. Note, a.k.a. C. Fresh, a.k.a. Cornelius Coltoniferous the Third, Esquire, of course. And I'd like to give a shout out to my gracious sidekick who was not able to be here for this episode, but you heard his voiceover at the beginning. That is J-Dub. We'll get him back here soon. Also, I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the executive producer of the show, McCoolin, behind the boards, making us sound great. We really appreciate it, as always. Our program is a San Diego-centric program, and we touch on a variety of topics, such as local news, politics, sports, music, culture, and of course, craft beer. We also speak our minds on the Beatdown Show. We are beholden to no one. We have no sponsors and no real agenda other than to entertain and to promote San Diego, everything that kind of goes along with. Each episode will also feature an interview with some sort of local luminary, dignitary, or other person of interest. And the show's constantly evolving, folks. So there'll be a lot of moving parts, and we want you to be able to interact with us. So here's how you can do that. You can hit us up on Facebook, The Beatdown Show. At Twitter, we are at Beatdown Show. We have a Gmail account if you want to email us and tell us how much we suck. And that's beatdownshowsd@gmail.com. And, of course, check out the website of my executive producer, at McCoolin, McCoolin.com. Currently, his band, the Gorgeous Boy Scouts, are in the studio laying down tracks. And we're happy to hear that, of course. All right. Well, now that we got that out of the way, it's time to get to the show breakdown.
The flow will break you down.
Let the flow will break you down.
The flow will break you down.
Let the flow will break you down.
The flow will break you down.
Let the flow will break you down.
It's pretty simple, really. We'll have an opening segment while we talk. We're going to basically just catch up on what we've missed since June, which was the last time we recorded. Now it's September. So there's been a lot going on. So we got a lot to catch up on around town. We'll have a sports segment. There's a lot to go on there, especially because the oblong ball made of pigskin, that season's pretty much upon us right now. So there's a lot going on there. We will have a guest interview. I'm really excited about it. It's going to be a local chef, Billy Gilchrist. Really excited that he's coming on the program. And that's going to be a pre-recorded interview. May have a special guest stopping by as well. That's going to be less of an interview and more of just a couple guys rapping. Then we'll go into a little bit about the local music scene. Obviously something that's very important on the Beatdown show. So we'll get into that. We will also then go into our craft beer segment. And then, of course, the signature piece, the Beatdown list, where we put anybody who's been needing a metaphorical slap to the head. We'll put them on notice. That's always fun to do. And that'll probably wrap things up this time around. But without any further ado, it's time to spit a little bit of fire.
More fire, more fire, more fire.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Well, here's what happened in the last few months while the Beatdown show was hibernating.
Man, I've got certain information.
We come bearing information, and here's what we're going to start with. There was a big blow to UC San Diego's Alzheimer's study. It got swooped by USC in Los Angeles. They're actually starting a new institute here in San Diego, but it's USC nonetheless. Here's the deal. The thing has gone to the courts. UC San Diego's winning the legal battle. Unfortunately, USC is kind of getting most of the money and the contracts from that all-important study. Keep your eye on that. That's still happening. Moving on. City Heights, great neighborhood here in San Diego, kind of right in the middle of the map. City Heights is potentially going to get a brand new sign, a marquee sign, for a little neighborhood pride. There is a resident who's spearheading a plan in a story first reported by The Reader back in the spring and then followed up recently by KPBS. And I think it'd be a great thing for that community's identity. And I've seen some drawings of what the sign will look like. To me, it looks a lot like the Hillcrest sign, but in more of an arch style. And obviously, San Diego's uptown neighborhoods and pocket communities have a real history of really cool signs that let you know exactly where you are. So does Encinitas, so does Chula Vista, and even El Cajon. So I'm kind of hoping that comes together. We'll keep our eyes on that for you. In something that could probably affect how you get around town, transportation. That was supposed to be a car horn. That sounded terrible. It sounded like a Pinto dying on the side of the road. There's the I-94 expansion that's happening. That's supposed to connect downtown to the 805. There'd be some bus rapid transit with that. And interchange modifications. It may sound boring, but it probably affects a lot of you commuters out there. And especially if you live in Golden Hill or just to the south of that, Mount Hope, that area, Sherman Heights. It's definitely going to change the way people merge on and off the freeway, and the bus rapid transit is going to serve some customers there. I'm always fascinated by how that kind of stuff works. On the other side of things, over in Hillcrest, they're talking about adding bike lanes to make that part of town a lot more bike-friendly. A lot of local businesses are very concerned about what it's going to do to their bottom line because it would remove needed parking spaces from that community. And I can understand where they're coming from. However, I think that the progressive thing to do is to stay, keep trying to make San Diego's bike-friendliest city. Get people out of their cars. Let's reduce congestion. Let's try to be, I don't know, eco-friendly. I think that would be really important. People are always going to drive, and they're just going to have to fight for parking a little bit more. Obviously, if you're a business owner, people fight for parking too hard, and they're just going to pass on by. So keep your eyes on that. We'll follow it as well. And then really the last thing to update here is over what something we've been constantly talking about. And it's really been the biggest story of the year, and that's what's happening with the Chargers and the stadium. And, you know, that whole thing, it's a mess right now. It looks like the Chargers aren't real excited about the stadium plan that the city has come up with. They wanted it downtown. The city has kind of decided that Mission Valley is the place to be. And then there's always the L.A. Carson situation that's looming to the north. And it also seems like the St. Louis Rams are pretty much destined for Inglewood, and that plays a part in it. I know this. I've just noticed around town the last several months that fan sentiment appears to be turning against the team as if it wasn't already bad, and it was. So we'll see what happens with that. That's always a perfect segue for our sports.
Make any change
segment,
but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
Jimmy Chitwood, now Coach Norman Dale, give it to us.
At the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners.
We're all going to be winners. Well, college football season's almost upon us, and the two local college football teams are playing each other in a weird twist because they play at different levels. Stay tuned. We'll discuss it on the next Beatdown show. But speaking of beatdowns, San Diego State's hosting the USD Toreros, the non-scholarship USD Toreros, and it's going to be ugly. There's no real way to slice it. I'm going to go ahead and say the final score is going to be 54-17 in favor of the Aztecs. We'll see how I did when we come back for our next episode. But I just hope nobody from USD gets hurt. They play a good brand of small college football. And if you're looking for a true underdog, there's no bigger one than them this opening weekend. A couple things we missed over the summer. Antonio Gates, the tight end from the Chargers. Say it ain't so. 85. What happened? He got busted for PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs. He's going to miss the first four games of the regular season. Said it was some sort of holistic, sort of typical excuse you hear from guys who get busted for it. Anyway, guy's going to be a Hall of Famer, and he's had a pretty terrific career. I think fans are going to give him the benefit of the doubt. On the other side of the Chargers news, from on-the-field stuff here. We're not talking about Satan stuff anymore. Phillip Rivers re-signs for a huge contract extension of the leader of the defense. Safety Eric Weddle does not. Seems like they're sending a mixed message there. Not really sure what it is. Who knows? Anyway, football almost upon us. Something that also stuck with me, we had the Women's World Cup this summer. San Diego drew the third best television ratings in the country for that exciting USA Women's World Cup victory. Pretty cool to hear that. San Diego's soccer community is really, really supportive. And tell you what, it's growing too. I'm really impressed with what I've seen. Moving on, Padres. Really been kind of hovering below 500 for most of the season. It's been a disappointing season. They didn't make any moves at the trade deadline back in July, which I guess is a good thing. It would have been pretty awful to see them make all these trades to get rid of the high-paid guys they got. So at least that didn't happen, but I'll tell you what. Outfielder Matt Kemp kind of turned it around a little bit. I mean, he's approaching 20 homers and 100 RBI, and he's batting closer to 275. Hope he keeps it up and finishes strong. He's a player that's going to be here a few more years, and I think it'd be great if San Diego really embraced him. And last thing I wanted to end on, in case you missed it, former Mission Bay High School, home of the Bucks graduate Arian Foster, running back for the Houston Texans, had a big article in ESPN the magazine in August. Basically, most of the article was about how he does not believe in God and how that is kind of rare in the NFL. But what struck me most from that article is about how little he cares that much about really showing off and flaunting his money. A direct quote from the article, I don't want or need much. The rest is luxury, fluff. I've saved about 80% of what I've made, and I'll continue that. I won't have to work when I'm done, can live off the interest, put my kids through college, let them have the money when I'm in a box, and call it a day. Arian Foster. Man, I'm proud of him for saying that. He's not going to be broke when he's done, which is great, because he is currently on a 5-year $43.5 million contract with the Texans, and he's hurt to start the year. So we'll see what happens to him. And then I guess one more thing on the sports front, but it's pretty exciting because it has to do with hockey. That's right, hockey fans. We're heading into the final countdown until your San Diego Gulls get going. Now, while the season doesn't officially begin until October, right now in September, this coming weekend, probably by the time you hear this, it will have already happened, the Gulls Block Party is happening at the Courtyard, a new kind of park venue in San Diego's East Village downtown, where it's going to be kind of a meet and greet with the coach. There's going to be giveaways and just a lot of excitement to kind of ramp things up. I think it is a ticketed event, but tickets are cheap. Hopefully the Beatdown Show will check in with that and we'll have an update on how that went. But for those that are wondering, the Gulls will start the season on October the 10th at home against the Grand Rapids Griffins at the Dump. Off the 8, that's right, the sports arena, a.k.a. the Valley View Casino Center. Natives know where it is. It's our dump, though. And, you know, that's all we have on sports. So, terrific. All right, joining the Beatdown Show right now is Chef Billy Gilchrist. He was voted 2-time Chef of the Year in Coronado by Coronado Lifestyle Magazine. That's voted on by the good denizens of the island, for the good denizens of the island. And he is a chef at Tartine. I'm under the, understanding that it is a kind of a cozy European bistro fare, but cafe as well. There's a cafe component to it as well. Well, enough of me blabbering on. Let's get to the chef. Chef, thanks for joining us today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing wonderful. Had a couple of cool downs last night and feeling it a little this morning. Woke up on the hardwood floor, but I feel great. Glad to be here.
Fantastic. Hey, you know, chefs, you guys are working till all hours of the night. You've got to unwind somehow, right?
Definitely
got to
unwind. It's mandatory. It's mandatory. Especially when you get strung out on some iced coffee during the day, too. It's hard.
It's tough to balance it all. Tell me a little bit about Tartine. For those that don't know about the place, it's obviously got a great rep over there on the island. And really, if you think about it, when you can master things over there, we're talking about, for San Diego County, you're on the radar. So.
Yeah, well, Tartina is a little European bistro cafe. It's located on First and Orange in Coronado. We open at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it basically looks like a coffee shop. They do, the ladies in the morning make all kinds of delicious scones, breads, quiches, sandwiches, and salads, and that runs all day and all night. And then I'm in charge of the dinner, so I go in at about 1 o'clock, and I prep for 3 to 4 hours for dinner service, and that runs from about 5 to 9:30. And we hit up the local farmers market. We only have reach and refrigerators at work, so we're constantly changing our special menu.
Okay.
We do everything from flat iron steaks to fish stews and fish of the day. Handmade gnocchi we make in-house out of potato. They're like little dumplings. It's really delicious. So I have the privilege of most chefs are actually overseers, and they take care of everybody on the line. They expedite a lot of the time at the end of the night and make sure everything doesn't go wrong. I'm really lucky and fortunate the fact that I get to cook the food along with write the menu every day. So that really helps out, and I have a really, really good staff that helps me not drown. So that's the key. You gotta have a good team. Otherwise, you'll lose your mind in a kitchen. It's an overrated job. I feel like with a lot of the TV shows that have happened, being a chef has been glorified, but they don't tell you about the crappy hours that you're going to be working, how you always work vacations, or you always work holidays. On holidays and stuff like that. And so it's rough, but I love cooking. It's a huge part of my life.
Sure.
If I go on vacation, my money's spent on food and a cocktail here and there. So I really love working at Tartine. I've been there about 8 years now, 9 years. And my buddy was working there, and he went to CIA in New York.
Mm.
And so I worked under him for 2 years, and he taught me some technique, some diction that I needed to know to help me out. I had worked in a kitchen since I was 17, was when I started working for him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Anthony's Fish Grotto down by...
Sure, San Diego Institution.
Down by the bay and stuff. I worked at one in Mission Valley, and that was my first kitchen experience, was working there, and I worked my way up to a manager, and then it was just time for me to move on. And I can't see myself not working in a kitchen, you know?
Right.
And I'm originally from Imperial Beach, so...
That's, IB, baby.
That's IB local. So there was this stigmata growing up about Coronado and IB.
Sure, you know, I would imagine there would be.
I think it's pretty funny that I'm chef in Coronado, but I'm from IB, and all the Coronado people look down on the IB people.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of a little heartwarming for me that happens, that I'm the IB kid making it up there.
Look at this IB kid, you know. He came from nothing, and now he's serving the best of the best in Coronado. Well, fancy old Coronado.
Well, especially I played water polo and swam and stuff at Mar Vista High School.
Home of the Mariners.
And so, of course, the best program in the county for water polo is Coronado. And so that was a huge rival. And we lost in semifinals my senior year to Coronado 11-8, 11-9. And so it's a little redemption getting back at him.
Yeah. Nice. Hey. Take that, you Islanders.
IB kid, getting it done. So
I love that. And you know what? That leads me into my next question, because I was going to ask you how you got started, but you kind of answered that with Anthony's.
My first actual cooking was when I was in high school. My mom got pregnant when I was 16, and my little brother sat really low during the pregnancy to where she had to sit down a lot. And here I am about 6'2", 140, 138 pounds. But I would eat everything. So it was like, I had to learn how to cook, because when my mom gave birth, she actually broke her pelvic bone.
Oh, wow.
And couldn't walk for about 2 months. So she had like a walker she would walk around with. And you want to talk about the best form of birth control ever? Give a skinny kid a little baby to hold all the time. Babies don't like skinny kids. They like little plush moms and dads and stuff. And so that was the best form of birth control, because I was like, this kid does not like being held by me. And it was a blessing in disguise. You know? So,
sure.
So I like that.
That worked out well. So what we talked about how you got to Tartine, a friend of yours kind of helped you make your way over there. Was there some kind of a culinary school or anything like that that got you into it, or was it just you were thrown into the fire?
No.
Bad pun, sorry.
Well, I grew up in a hunting family, and so my stepdad was part of a dog club, and during the weekends, not every weekend, but, you know, once a month or something, they'd go out to the desert, out to El Centro, to the alfalfa fields, and train the dogs for hunting. So they plant the birds in the field, the hunters have their dogs work the field, the birds get flushed, hunters shoot them, dog retrieves the bird. All right, so here's really good pheasant. I'm sixth, seventh grade, right around there.
Right.
My dad hooks me up with a pair of scissors, a knife, and buckets of water, and I basically clean these birds for these hunters. Because when they get out of the field, it's like 100 degrees out there, 110. They go and walk out in the field. What do they want to do? They want to go get in shade, crack a beer, and relax. I'm a kid. I can't go out in the field and shoot guns yet because I'm too young. So what am I going to do? I clean the birds. And so I would gut them. I wasn't big on skinning, so I'd usually take care of all that. And that's where I really learned my knife skills and butchery and stuff like that was as a kid. And nice. I'd walk away in a weekend. I'd make 80 to 120 bucks as a kid cleaning birds, which meant I cleaned like 80 birds.
All right. You know what I mean? It was
80 to $1 a bird. Of these birds, basically what it was. I look back.
Slave labor.
Should have made more money, definitely. Yeah.
But hey, it's nice to have money when you're a kid. But look, you learned a skill. Obviously, knife skills are super important in the kitchen. You know, my audience knows that I've been in the industry kind of from a front of house perspective, so I have mad love and respect for the kitchen. Knife skills are something that you really have to have if you're going to succeed in the kitchen. Maybe it's overlooked.
Yeah, you. Well, the way you achieve knife skills is practice. Just practice, practice, and having a nice knife. I can't reiterate having a sharp knife makes your job so much easier. I prefer Japanese steel. I think it stays sharper longer. It's really easy to hone. It's less heavy. It's usually one piece of steel fortified all the way through. So that's what I prefer using. So people at home, go ahead and spend money on a $100, $120 knife and don't feel guilty about it because that will last you forever as long as you take care of it. Don't put it in the dishwasher.
Right. No. Yeah. To all you amateur chefs out there, do not put your cutlery in the dishwasher, especially if you want it to last. I'm speaking with Billy Gilchrist. He's a chef over at Tartine Restaurant in Coronado.
He's a handsome guy, too.
He is a handsome guy. He's got long, lovely brown locks and a very well-manicured beard.
Thank you.
So Tartine, let's get back to the Coronado scene. I think people think of different areas of town when they think of the best restaurants. People are going to talk about La Jolla. They're going to talk about Hillcrest, downtown, of course. Where does Coronado kind of fit into kind of the, you know, the restaurant scene in all of San Diego?
Well, the culinary, there's some really nice restaurants in Coronado. You have the Dell, Leroy's, there's a place called Steak that opened up. The Coronado Brewing Company is right around the corner from Tartine, so that's really nice to go and have a beer afterwards or before dinner and then come over to Tartine because our food will blow theirs out of the water. There's just something about fresh, and that's the key. We're using fresh. Nothing's frozen. Everything's made to order, so we don't have sauces lying around. We cook everything off of a six-burner stove at Tartine.
Okay.
So it's definitely one of those, if we're really packed at dinner, food's not going to come out instantly fast. We're not a fast food restaurant.
Right.
But you can taste the love in the food, and that's the key, because we care about what we're doing, and we want it to be done the right way. And that goes a long way. So,
absolutely.
And we're lucky because on Tuesdays, there's a farmer's market right down at the ferry landing. So we go down there, and that helps me. Tuesdays are my Monday. That's when I start off the week. So I basically go to the farmer's market, and I plan what I'm going to do for the rest of the week based off of what's at the farmer's market. So that makes my day and my job not become mundane and the same monotonous thing over and over and over, is that I have the luxury of being able to change the menu every night and type it up and be like, okay, here's what we're going to do tonight. Here's what's going to go on. And the fact that we only have reach in refrigerators, we get our meat, we get our fish every day, every 2 days, depending on business. And that makes it to where our product's good. So obviously the food's going to taste good.
Right.
I could boast my horn and say I'm doing a great job and I'm an amazing chef. But the real key is that I'm good, using good product, and that makes me look good. So
yeah,
that's the key. That's really the key. It's good food. Good food.
Good food. Good times. We've got Billy Gilchrist here, the chef. at Tartine in Coronado. He's won awards. He's also, like we said, a really handsome guy, an affable fellow. He's got a decent jump shot as well. You know, how about this? What about stress in the kitchen? Because I think those television shows like Top Chef and Gordon Ramsay and all that, they glorify the pressure, the stress, this and that. It's not for everyone. I'm sure at this point in your career, you've learned how to manage that. But what is the key for like folks that are just getting into it, or maybe the average layperson or diner doesn't know about the stress and the pressure of the kitchen?
I will tell you what about those shows, man. I can watch about half of the episode, and then when shit starts hitting the fan, I get really anxiety ridden, and I'm like, why are they doing that? So most of the time, I never am able to finish those TV shows, you know? Okay. And but the key is working in a restaurant, it is stressful. You have a million things going on at one time. If you can't multitask, I don't recommend becoming a chef or working in a restaurant, period, at all. Right. And you can tell people that have never worked in a restaurant or customers that come in because they're just oblivious and clueless to what's going on and all the levels of the restaurant and what takes place. But the main key for me, and when I'm training people in the restaurant, and you can see they're starting to lose it, they're looking at tickets, and when you're looking at things, it starts to go blurry, and you're like, what am I supposed to cook? I can't even read these tickets right now. The biggest thing I stress is stepping back, taking a deep breath, and really actually breathing. And that helps clear your mind and really refocus. And then you step back in and you do your job. Because if you're going to stay in that pandemonium state of mind, you're going to sink. You're going to sink real
Ship
fast.
Be sinking, for sure.
People are going to be complaining about their food. You're going to be overcooking stuff or undercooking it. And it just turns into stress world. And it is a really, really stressful job. There's a high turnover rate. I know a lot of buddies and a lot of chefs that you get burnt out. You got to take care of yourself, and you can't burn yourself out, because it's cooking and it should be fun and it should be enjoyable and you should love doing it, and you don't want to make it harder on yourself. So just breathe.
Breathe.
Just breathe. Just take a deep breath and drink some water while you're at it. You know? Drink
Stay
some
hydrated.
Water. Yeah.
Well, let's end on this, Billy. Do you have a signature dish or maybe something that you enjoy making at Tartine the most?
Well, I have something that's on the special menu and pretty much has to stay on there all the time because people love it. We have, it's basically a cioppino. It's a fish stew. So we always have fish, we always have mussels, and if we have clams and the rest of the goodies, we make a fish stew, which has a base of pomodoro, which is an in-house tomato sauce that we cook for about 3 to 4 hours. And that's the base of it. And we have a fish or shrimp stock that we use for flavoring in it. And it has sausage, sweet peppers, and it's just one of those good, earthy, make-you-feel-good, stick-to-your-rib type of dishes. I have friends that go surfing down in Mexico and have places down an hour outside of Cabo. They're always like, every time we're down there, we wish you were making the fish stew for us.
It's
like
Pino,
one of the things you want. You want that fish stew. So I'd have to say that's one of the things that people really, really enjoy and call in and ask if it's there. They call in and are like, do you have fish stew tonight? We're like, okay, yeah, we'll have fish stew for you.
There we go, the fish stew, cioppino. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Billy, hey, thanks a lot for coming by and being a guest on the Beat Down Show. We'll keep an eye on you out there on the island, brother.
Thanks for having me, my guy, and take care of that pretty mouth, okay?
I will. There he goes, Billy Gilchrist, our guest on the Beat Down Show.
Music!
You're listening to The Beatdown Show, featuring the insuperable C. Colton. Now, back to the show.
Tell you what, it's great to hear J-Dub's voice, even if he can't be with us on this episode. Not going to lie. Fantastic. So yes, on the local music scene, I went to a show in July. Actually, it was July 31st. It was almost August. At the Marrow in Hillcrest. And the headliner was an LA band, Crash Kings. But I got there early because I wanted to see local blues rocker Jimmy Ruelas and hear what he was going to be offering. And I'll tell you what, this young man really, really brings it to the stage. He's a hell of a guitar player. He's got some pretty soul stylings on the vocals. And
really like what this young man's about. He gigs a lot around town, but I did clip a couple of songs, little excerpts from that show, and we'll listen to those here. And then, like I said, keep an eye out for him. Also, I'm sure all you big festival goers know that the giant 3-day Kaboo festival is happening at Del Mar this month, September. Good luck to those of you that are going. I hope you have a great time. Very expensive ticket. I believe the general admission 3-day pass was just under $300. Wow. Big names. I think that one of the biggest names on the bill from the local standpoint, Slightly Stupid. And they have a new studio album out. I definitely support those guys. And what a tremendous festival that'll be. First time they've done that. So enjoy for those of you going. But anyway, here are those clips from the Jimmy Ruelas show at the Mero back in July. One of my favorite segments of the show when we discuss the delights of the adult beverage world. It's called What You Drinking On.
Hey, careful, man. There's a beverage here, huh?
I like a beverage here. I'm kind of thirsty.
And I want to be a beer truck.
So, yeah. I went on a vacation this summer. I went back east to the Maryland Eastern Shore, and I wanted to see the best of Maryland's craft beers and what they had to offer. And I found a great one that I want to tell you all about. And it's from a brewery called Heavy Seas, and it's their Loose Cannon Triple Hopped IPA. It's pretty smooth, it's got a creamy feel to it, mouthfeel to it, and it's their flagship beer. And they have a bunch of other really good ones, including a Blood Orange Pale, I think it was. Could be wrong about that. But I know this. The Loose Cannon got me loose, and that was a good thing. And you will get loose on it as well if you can find it, because it is 7.25% ABV. So I highly recommend that. I realize that's not a local beer. I figured it'd be fun to kind of put the spotlight on something from the East Coast, something people might not be looking for. I know a lot of folks are familiar with Dogfish Head. They put out that great 90-minute IPA that is really one of the better ones across the craft beer realm. I like that one as well. People are probably familiar with that. That's pretty easy to get. I have not seen Heavy Seas locally, but the Loose Cannon from them, but I will look for it. And it, like I said, it's triple hopped, so it's hop cubed. Something like 3 pounds of hops per batch. Pretty impressive. Also like the Flying Dog Old Bay IPA. I've actually seen some of Flying Dog's products out here. The Raging Bitch is the one that you see the most. It's kind of a hoppy Belgian, but their Old Bay IPA actually has a little Old Bay seasoning flavor to it. So keep an eye out for those. Also wanted to give a real quick shout out to a really great room to try out here in San Diego. And that is Fall Brewing in North Park. They have a great spot on 30th, just a couple blocks south of Adams, maybe a block and a half south of Adams Avenue. So check them out when you get a second.
The Beatdown Show recommends that you respect the craft. Please drink responsibly.
All right. Well, you know what? We have a kind of a special drop-in guest here. My boy Milwaukee John has come by. He's not lived in San Diego all that long. I thought it'd be kind of fun on the Beatdown Show here to discuss kind of a Midwestern transplant's point of view. And we'll talk a little sports, too, maybe even some beer. So, John, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for coming by. Talk to me. You're originally from Wisconsin. Kind of break that down for me.
Yeah, I grew up in Milwaukee. Spent the first 18 years of my life there. Then I went to Oklahoma for college. Got addicted to college football. Spent a good 5 years there.
Easy to do there.
Yeah, most definitely. Didn't really know what I was doing right after college, so I could tell that I didn't really want to spend the rest of my time in Oklahoma. Great college town for me, but not really a good fit culturally. Mm-hmm. So went back to Wisconsin, worked there for a while, and then finally decided, you know what, I've been dreaming about going to San Diego for a long time. Let's do it. And my girlfriend and I moved out here together.
Fantastic. And so you've been in San Diego how long?
Just over 2 years.
And, tell me what brought you out here, man. I mean, you said you were dreaming about it. besides the beach, I mean.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, 25 years of Wisconsin winters and not liking winter sports just kind of took a psychological toll on me. And
man, I hope you've received the right kind of counseling or therapy that you needed for that.
I get it every day now. Winter, summer, it's always nice here. It's beautiful.
What could be better, right? You know, let's talk a little bit about sports. I mean, you're from Wisconsin, so you're a diehard Packers fan.
Definitely. Sometimes people ask me that. They say, are you a Packers fan? Instead of what you just said, which is, so you're a diehard Packers fan. You get it.
I feel like I've met a few people from Wisconsin. That's typically the case. In this situation, a lot of them, most of the time, whether they went to UW-Madison or not, are big-time Badgers fans. You, because you went to college somewhere else, probably might root for the Badgers as long as they're not playing Oklahoma, right?
Yep, and they've never have since I started following college football, so it's a pretty easy 1-2 situation.
That day could be coming, but, you know, then you become a transplant out here, and I'd like to know what was different about San Diego for you that you weren't expecting and something that has been kind of, if you can kind of paint the other side of that picture, and what has been actually better than expected?
Well, while we're still talking about sports, I guess the thing that, even though it should have been the most expected, given how obvious it was, I really wasn't expecting how weird it was for football games to start this early in the morning. Especially as a college football fan, and being a fan of teams that aren't from the West Coast, the games here start at like 9 a.m., and it's just early to get up.
I guess you don't realize it when you're used to seeing them at noon or 11. Yeah. Or
and I mean, 11 and noon isn't exactly late in the day, and I like to drink right when I watch football, and I'm not against drinking at 9 in the morning, but it's just a little bit of a different vibe.
it gets your day started sooner, and then you can get on to other things in the evening.
So. That's true.
I've never met anybody who came from the Midwest or even the East Coast that had a problem with the early football starting times, whether it be college or pro.
So. No, definitely not a problem, but just more different than I expected.
Different. Fair enough. What kind of exceeded your expectations out here? I mean, you knew the weather would be good. You knew the beaches were awesome.
Yeah, you know, I think what exceeded my expectations more than anything is just that the people I've met out here, I don't really know what my expectations of California culture would be like, but San Diego especially seems kind of like a melting pot of people are just from all over.
Right.
You know, I've met a bunch of people from the Midwest, met a bunch of people from out east, met a bunch of people here from California. And I guess it just seems like the culture here is more of a mix. And I think that's pretty interesting. Nothing against any particular local cultures, but it's interesting.
Definitely. I think, to me, even being a native, that definitely is something that I try to explain to folks when they ask what it's like here. So there's that. Now, here's the other thing. Since we're already on the sports topic, or we've kind of danced around it a little bit, you are a Packers fan. But, you know, the local team, the San Diego Chargers, is in this giant mess about what to do about their stadium. Do they move to L.A.? And potentially you know, alienate the local fan base? Do they stay here and get something done, but potentially upset the taxpayers? What's your perspective as a guy who probably doesn't care less about the team and doesn't really matter to you if they move or not?
Well, I'm actually a pretty good person to talk about this because on one hand, I got the Packers, a team that's pretty much never going anywhere because the town of Green Bay is so culturally connected to it that they raise money just by selling pieces of paper for a couple $100s, and you can be a, you know, using air quotes here, you can be an owner.
You can be an owner, exactly. You earn that, hold on to that stock certificate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the stock certificate, and, you know, they can raise a couple $100 million like that pretty easily. But then at the exact same time, the Milwaukee Bucks are going through a nearly identical situation as the Chargers, where the owners, you know, pretty standard situation of they want more money.
Sure.
They want the taxpayers to pay for the new stadium or they'll leave.
They need a new arena to play in there. I wasn't aware of their situation.
Well, and when you say need, I think that's one of the most interesting parts about it. To me, it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with the Bradley Center. I go there when I'm in town and, you know, it's not new. But no. It's not falling apart. It's not like Wrigley Field.
Sorry, Cubs fans.
Well, that's, you know.
They've put a lot of money into that. But anyway, we're not going to talk about that. But yeah, like you're saying, it's not a need thing, really, in Milwaukee for the NBA team.
It just seems like a smart business move by people that have been very successful in their business careers to say, hey, you know, I've got a team. I own something that's a very limited commodity. There's only 30, 32 of these in the country. People are big fans of them. I got cities tripping over themselves to have one. Why wouldn't I just shake down the local citizenry for a couple extra bucks or a couple extra $100 million?
Exactly, yeah. It's, yeah, a few $100 million, yeah, exactly. Thank you for correcting yourself on that. But yeah, no, I'm just always curious. I mean, I know a lot of transplants out here. You're one of them. And it's interesting to get your perspective on things like that, especially because you live in North Park.
Mm-hmm.
You're a San Diego resident now. If it were to go to a vote and the San Diego City Council was asking its taxpayers whether or not they wanted to pay a little extra money to help keep the team here, meaning the Chargers, how would you vote on something like that? That's not necessarily the situation that's going on right now. Yeah. I'm dumbing it down here, but how would you vote on something?
I would vote in my pocketbook just because, like you said, I'm not really a Chargers fan. But right. That being said, if I was still living in Milwaukee and they were talking about getting rid of the Bucks, I would vote the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not really voting whether or not to stay or leave. It's voting whether or not to cave into what I consider to be pretty unacceptable demands that owners are making. And, you know, there's going to have to be a couple cities that stand firm if this is ever going to not be the standard mode of operations. If every city that gets in this situation just caves in, this is the way it's going to be for the next however long. But it just doesn't seem like the best way it should be. Teams should want to stay in cities for the cultural reasons, and they should find a way to make it profitable. I mean, you can't convince me that these owners can't make money where they are. So
right, and in this case, you know, they think the grass is greener in Los Angeles.
Well, it is greener the if they pay them.
Right. Well, then there's more money there on the table. And anyway, we could talk for hours and hours on that. It's been a topic here on the Beatdown Show that we've discussed. So let's move on. What do you do?
I work for a company that does third party healthcare interfaces, which is about as exciting as it sounds. If you got a hospital with two different systems and they don't natively communicate well with each other, they hire a company to come in and, you know, cram the square pegs into the round holes and make them talk to each other.
Okay. So is it like an IT type thing?
Yeah, pretty much. Software development, IT. It's kind of a bit mix of both.
And I know we were talking before we got going here. You work from home, right?
Indeed I do.
So that must be pretty convenient.
It is. This is the only time of year that I'm not super thrilled about it, and that's just because I'm too stubborn to get air conditioning.
Right.
I'm still too in love with the concept of it being beautiful outside every day to accept that I probably should get air conditioning for the couple weeks a year that it's actually really useful.
It can be useful for a couple, 3 weeks out here, but after that, there's not much of a need for it. But yes, I feel your pain there. So one other thing is, so since you work from home, do you own a car?
I actually do not. I live with my girlfriend, Anastasia, and she owns a car, and we've been doing that for 2 years. I live in North Park. I can pretty much bike everywhere I want to be most of the time.
Perfect.
Seems like one car is the right amount for the two of us.
Crazy that you'd move to kind of the car culture capital of the United States, Southern California. I mean, maybe L.A. L.A. is still Southern California, and it's certainly, you'd probably need one there unless you had a weird situation. But in San Diego, like you said, you highlighted all the reasons why you don't really need one, man. Do you ever find yourself wishing you had one?
You know, every now and then there's a situation where it would be nice to have a car right now. And in those situations, I usually take an Uber. So it's
a game changer, yeah.
Yeah. And I actually moved from Madison, Wisconsin. That's where I spent about the last 9 years before I came here. And that's an extremely bike-friendly culture they got there.
Sure.
And I always kind of assumed that, you know, Southern California, car culture, you know, everyone's going to be running bikers off the road, that kind of thing. But I swear I get honked at less down here when I'm biking around than I did in Madison.
Okay. Well, maybe the drivers are less tolerant in Wisconsin.
Yeah, they're just more relaxed. I'm not sure which. But.
Fair enough. Hey, let's talk beer real quick. I think one bonus to especially moving to San Diego, which is the craft beer capital of the United States, is that you've gotten to sample a lot of the wares of what we have going on here. What are some of the breweries that you're really into, and maybe even if you have a favorite beer or two that are local stuff?
You know, I always feel like I should have a better answer for that question than I do. I actually really like trying new things, and that's one of the things that's really awesome about San Diego is that you can, especially in North Park, you can turn a corner, go a couple blocks, and there's a brewery you didn't even know existed because it just opened 3 weeks ago. You know, obviously Stone got a lot of good stuff. Mm-hmm. Ballast Point, I actually really liked their Grapefruit Sculpin.
You and everybody else, man.
I think the original Sculpin's a little overrated. It's great, don't get me wrong. It's just not, I shouldn't say overrated, just not exactly my thing.
Sure.
But the Grapefruit just seems like a great seasonal beer. Yeah, there's, you know, I could just go on and on, but I drink them and then I'll be the first to admit sometimes I forget them.
No, that's totally fair. You name dropped a few of them, and that Grapefruit Sculpin, I think, it's so popular that it's the demand is super high now that I think it's no longer just seasonal. I mean, everybody I talk to from out of town knows about it and is all about it. So, but it's delicious. So why not?
Well, and I'm a grapefruit fiend anyway, so it's really right up my alley.
That just sung to you right there. I'm not usually a fruit in my beer kind of guy.
I don't usually mix the two. I'm pretty much never a fan of like the orange peel or the whatever, but you just get that. I'm a big fan of grapefruits themselves. And yeah. Just give me a hint of that in the beer, and I'm happy.
They just nailed it. They have the perfect combo on that, and so a lot of people are with you there. Well, look, Ben, I appreciate you stopping by the Beatdown Show. This was kind of an impromptu deal. Maybe we'll check back in with you at some point just to see if your impressions of San Diego have changed.
Yeah, most definitely. Hopefully I can help deliver a beatdown to the soccer team we're about to play tonight.
There you go. Hey, good luck on the pitch tonight, man. Go make it happen.
All right. Thanks, man.
Milwaukee John, there he goes. I'm glad he stopped by the show. And now it's time for our signature portion of the show. Something you all should know very well by now if you've listened to any of the first three episodes. It's called the Beatdown List. All right. This one really bummed me out. We're going to put on the Beatdown List the thieves that stole iPads and damaged a couple of classrooms at San Diego High School in the last week of August. Ironically, as school was about to begin, did several tens of thousands of dollars worth of damage, maybe even as high as $100,000. San Diego High School is an inner city school. It's very close to the East Village, along Park Boulevard. And, you know, public school like that, San Diego High, home of the Cavers, just really doesn't need that kind of thing. I don't know who would do that sort of thing. It's pretty bad. don't know how there wasn't tighter security. I would imagine the campus is pretty much on lockdown when it's not in session. So that's unfortunate. But you thieves can hit the bricks. All right, moving also right along. The next entrant onto the list. Qualcomm executives. The blue chip stockholders. And I don't mean the employees that were offered stock options. Because the execs are going to be laying folks off. Business took a little bit of a downturn. It's been rumored as high as almost 5,000 layoffs are coming. They haven't happened yet. Qualcomm does employ something to the tune of 15,000 folks. Just here in San Diego alone, another 15,000 in parts elsewhere. I wonder how much the execs are going to be feeling that loss. Now, hopefully the Qualcomm employees, they'll probably land on their feet. I'm sure their resumes are pretty solid. But it just kills me to think that Qualcomm execs had to let people go because, I don't know, their dividends were a little lower than what they were expecting.
Straight cash, homie.
That's right. Thank you, Randy Moss. Straight cash. It's kind of what it's all about. Well, that's our beatdown list right there.
The beatdown list segment of this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only and does not condone or advocate violence in any form. Its larger purpose is to serve cautionary notice for the intended people or entities herein exposed that the informed populace is omnipresent, outraged, and fully operational and will no longer accept any tomfoolery, trickeration, hijinks, absurdity, rope-a-doping, carnival barking, hypocrisy, or insanity in any form or manner. Whatsoever.
All right. That brings us to the show close. And four episodes now. Deep. I'll tell you what, we're going to make a commitment to being a little more consistent with this, so hang with us if you can. Real quick, some contact info for the show. You can find us at beatdownshow.blogspot.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Pretty easy to find, actually, and our logo's up there. If you want to email the show and tell us how much we suck, it's beatdownsd@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Our Twitter handle is @beatdownshow. And don't forget to check out the website for our executive producer, McCoolin.com, who gets the biggest of thank yous on this one. Also like to thank Billy Gilchrist for being our guest. Milwaukee John as well, which was more of an impromptu kind of a thing. And J-Dub for allowing to have those amazing golden pipes and use his voiceover even though he couldn't be here. We'll get him back another time. We'll close with this quote. Perseverance, secret of all triumphs. Mortal words of Victor Hugo, 19th century French poet and novelist. Catch you next time. Namaste.